and welcome to my hearth. Now, it's interesting that I've called this particular episode What Daddy Did, in response to the question, what did you do in the war, Daddy? It would be lovely if I could give you a complete outline of what he did do. But like the theme of the rest of this podcast series, it's trying to find the wood from the trees. Or rather, to find a wood at all. Because what stands out about my father's career in the Second World War is that I know so little of it. I did ask him several questions about it, but he was very shtum about it. However, I do know certain things that both he and my mum told me. We need to start with a crucial moment at the beginning of his time in the army, which was when he actually signed up. When people went into the army, they were asked several questions, and one of them was, which is quite unusual, what does your father do for a living? I'm not quite certain why that question was asked, but anyway it was. Now, we have talked a little bit about William Crispin Harris, and at that particular time, I think my father replied that one of the things his father did was he was a commercial artist. And here we run up against army logic. The recruiting officer automatically said, well, if your father is an artist, you must be able to draw. Now, my father, who was never overtly proud or stupidly immodest about anything, would have been the first to say that although his father was a brilliant artist, my dad could not draw at all. He didn't attempt to do it, but even if he did even the slightest sketch of anything, he always had to explain what it was. It's ironic that I'm quite a good artist, and my sister was a brilliant artist, a beautiful drawer, and a great potter. The artistic gene had jumped a generation, as it were, and my grandfather's inheritance came to us in our generation. My father, however, it had passed him by in a major way. Now, this is important because the army thought he could draw and therefore put him into the reconnaissance division, who were the people who had to draw the maps that were happening in live terms, in terms of the battle strategies. My father knew enough about army discipline and army protocol not to try and argue the case. So he allowed himself to go to the reconnaissance division, and they were in little armoured cars. But he decided to be the person who looked after the car, did the driving, cooked all the meals, went back and forth with the maps, but didn't actually do any of the drawing. I know this to be true because at one point I found his army sketchbook, and it was completely empty. The paints had not been used. The pencils had never come out of their little tin. He, however, had travelled all over Africa and Europe behind enemy lines, being in charge of the maps. I think the fact that he had spent all of the war behind enemy lines was another reason why he was very quiet about what had gone on. I also know that being in the reconnaissance division was a very dangerous occupation, and that it was quite unusual that all of his particular little team survived the entire war. My dad was very good at keeping out of dangerous situations. There is a little side issue here. At one point he had to learn how to ride a motorbike through mountains. I am assuming that this is when he was in Italy and the terrain there was really mountainous and quite difficult. So he was sent on a particular training program, which was held in the Lake District, which had similar mountain roads that you had to deal with. And of course, it was being in Cumberland on this particular motorcycle course that led to him meeting my mum in a dance, where she was swept off her feet by this rather handsome army officer, and the rest is history. The rest of their courtship was done mainly by letter whilst he was away at the war. He was always very young looking, but he was in fact 15 years older than my mum when they got together. At that particular time, I suppose as a throwback to the Victorian era, it was never seen as a disadvantage for a gentleman to be older than the lady in a relationship. But I always felt that my mum's parents, my grandma and granddad, always found that a little bit difficult, that my dad was nearer in age to them, as it were, than they would have liked. The fact that he was posh and an army officer didn't help. More importantly, I think, the fact that he came from London and was going to be taking my mum away from Cumberland. There was a very great divide between the North and London at that particular time, and they really didn't like that thought. I think the fact that mum was the only girl in the family didn't help that. However, as I say, that's a slight digression which we can come back to at another point. So here we are with my father doing a very dangerous job in the Second World War in armoured cars. Apparently he was brilliant at driving them and they weren't easy. And his other job of doing all the catering would have gone down very well because he was quite a good cook. He really could make a meal out of nothing and he took great pleasure in making food appetising. He would always plate up the food, to use a culinary term here, very well. And if there was, you know, for instance, if we had an orange, he always cut it up beautifully. And if we were doing a salad or something like that, he would always say, "Would you like tomato cut-ups with that?" And he would then fashion the tomatoes into something that looked delicious. I've said that the particularities and eccentricities of people are what make them human, and I'm hoping you're beginning to get an idea about him. Anything about the actual campaigns he was on, I never knew about. I'd probably be able to find out more now, where all the records have been released. However, here are a couple of stories that he did tell me about his time in the war, which I hope you'll find amusing. First of all, even before the war, when he was a much younger man, one of the hobbies he was brilliant at was philately, stamp collecting. And he'd got into it because his uncle, Uncle Charlie Elliot, had worked for the India Department and had got loads of really unusual, rare stamps from India, which were sent to him all the time and which he gave to his nephew. At one point in Italy, my dad was billeted in a post office. His idea of heaven. And he had such an effect on the people in the post office that he remained friends with them for the rest of his life and would often go out to Italy with my mum and visit them. I think the lady was called Mama Seleni, but that could be a lie. Whenever they were put up in hotels or guest houses as part of their time off, the problem was that they had to keep their boots on, their army boots on, and also their guns. And it was very hot in Italy. So there was one example that he was in a hotel completely naked, I should say, apart from, obviously, his boots and his gun belt. And he woke up thinking, oh, I need to go to the loo. And he saw a door and he opened it. And actually, it was one of those little Juliet balconies that they have in beautiful houses in Italy. And he fell over it. His guardian angel was looking after him, and he landed on the awning over the entrance to the hotel. However, because of the fall, he actually went through the awning. Although it stopped his direct fall, the awning broke, and he landed on the pavement. Remember, he's completely naked, in front of two nuns. I asked him what he did, and he said, well, what else could I do? I stood up, I saluted, and I marched back through the hotel, back up to my room, and went back to sleep. Of course, the other thing that was unusual about them being behind enemy lines is that very often they were the first people to arrive in each town and village. And especially after the retreat of the Germans, they were the first people from the Allied forces. They arrived at one particular town and were seen as the liberators of that particular region. To such an extent that my dad was made mayor of the village. And again, it's one of the places that he went back to after the war, all the time of my childhood, because he loved Italy, and he was always welcomed with open arms. He loved Italian food, he loved the Italians, he loved Italian music, he particularly loved the Neapolitan love songs. He could play the piano by ear a bit, and he loved playing those particular Neapolitan love songs. And he also loved Beniamino Gigli, who sang them, and we had a recording of them, which he played a lot. Now, I'm going to end this podcast on a rather somber note, and I'm going to be very careful how I mention it, because, as I say, I can't verify this. It's one of the things I would like to do. But there was something quite strange that happened when I was just coming up to my teens. There was on the television a marvellous documentary series called The World at War, which was narrated by Sir Laurence Olivier and used so much footage and documentary film evidence from the war. It had many episodes, but there was one particular episode which, unfortunately, was about the concentration camps. And my father insisted, and I mean insisted, that my sister and I watched it. He didn't tell us why, he just said that we had to watch it. Now, I can only think that if his trajectory is what I think it was, going from Africa through Italy and into northern parts of Europe, that he may have unfortunately got involved in the liberation of concentration camps. The only reason I'm saying this is that I know that before the war he was a very devout Christian, but he said to my mum that there was something that happened to him in the war where he sort of lost his faith. He would never have discussions about religion, and certainly would never have stopped my sister and I getting involved. But obviously something that happened must have been very traumatic. Anyway, I'll tell you more about him and what happened to him after the war next time.